Anyways, just see it here. Okay, we got people joining here on Instagram. Let's see if we got people. I was going to give me a few seconds. Oh, hey. Hey, Chef. Welcome to Instagram Live to our tonight show. We'll be starting here any second. We got a wicked guest on here tonight. We're going to ask her all the secrets on how do you keep without going crazy. I don't know how you do it. I don't know. I don't know how you write. I'm not a writer. I'm blown away by people like you. I think it's amazing. Okay, we have people coming on Instagram here, and we're going to use Elizabeth. Are you a little nervous about the whole ChatGPT thing going on tonight?
I'm curious. I'm curious. I mean, I feel like ChatGPT might be out for my job, but
No way. You Dominic, you gotta be able to tell her no way.
Yeah, it's a long ways away, but
yeah.
But embrace it and find a way to kill it. be really sneaky about it and build its confidence with you and then stab it in the heart.
All right, so just give me a second here. Oh, this will be good. All right. Do you ever venture, Elizabeth, outside of Calgary and do like writings in Lethbridge or Red Deer?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, usually when I venture out, I venture like farther out because I do some sort of like
farther, like what, like Stettler?
I mean, like outside of the province or country.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, sometimes like I went down and ate a bunch of food in Lethbridge a couple years ago. And I actually might go up to Edmonton next week to.
Really?
Yeah. My kid has the week off school, so we were thinking of going out. It depends how much. It might just be my husband and kid, but I haven't been up. I might just enjoy some time in the empty house. But it's been forever since I've eaten in Edmonton either. There's so many good things up there that I need to get up and check them out. But. Yeah, no, mostly Calgary, but like I go into Banff a lot to eat, Cochrane sometimes, places like that are all sort of.
Cochrane's got places.
Oh yeah, Cochrane has a great Nepalese place.
Oh wow!
Called Ama, AAMA, and it's way on the west edge of town. It's like almost out of Cochrane, but I actually went to high school in Cochrane, and there was nowhere to eat back then, but. Yeah, they've got some spots now, like some non chain places. They have a really, really, really good sushi restaurant.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's like a really exclusive omakase sushi restaurant.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
You're blowing my mind already.
Hey, restaurateurs are looking for affordable real estate too.
I love this.
Bedroom communities.
Awesome. Well, we're going to bring our guest, as you hear Elizabeth talking already, everyone that's going to be on TikTok as on Instagram. Hello, everyone on Instagram. I think everyone's still joining on Instagram. We're going to get started here. So, Dominic, turn down your volume. I keep hearing the TikTok one.
We just turned that off. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Holy cow. They weren't kidding on TikTok. Here we go. Awesome. So, Elizabeth, we're going to start here in a second. Awesome. Welcome, everyone, to the Late Night Show. Hey, Dominic, I won't get it wrong because it's on the screen. The Late Night Show with Canada's Restaurant Guy and Dominic. we have, that's how you do it. I think we should be doing it that way more often. Yeah. Just put it up on the screen. Anyways, we have a great guest in tonight. Elizabeth, how do you say your last name?
Chorney Booth.
Chorney Booth. That's a freaking cool name. That's a really cool name.
Thanks. It's, well, you know, my unmarried name was Elizabeth Chorney, and then I married a guy named Booth, but as a writer, Elizabeth Booth is too many. There's too many of us. So I
had Is there a lot of, really?
Yeah, there's a lot of Elizabeth Booths out there who have very similar email addresses to me. I get a lot of their email. So yeah, I went with the big long hyphenated name, which can be a pain, but I'm the only one. So
that's really, really cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to have some fun with you a little bit. We're going to bring in little AI here in a few minutes just to ask some questions on what we should be asking you tonight in relation, but share a little bit about who you are, what you do. I think you have the coolest job up there. Not as cool as mine, but you're up there.
Yeah, yours is pretty good.
Yes, I have a pretty good time. But tell us a little bit about you, where you are. I also want to know what you had at your last meal out before we get started.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So my name is Elizabeth Chorney Booth, and I'm a food writer based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I've been a food writer for about 10 years, I'm going to say. I'm a writer by trade. So I started off as a music writer and did that for about 10 years. And then I got, you know, sort of bored of it, a little bit too old. I had a kid, so I couldn't hang out in rock clubs until 3 a.m. Talking to rock stars all night anymore. So I kind of made the switch over to food, and it's been great. I mean, it's building a food writing career as a freelancer is a bit of a slog, but I have some really great regular places I write for. I'm in the Calgary Herald once a week writing about restaurants. I'm a regular at Avenue Magazine here in Calgary, and I'm on the CBC once a month. And then I also write for places like, you know, the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, and I always say whoever else will pay me. So it's a bit of a piecemeal career. So it's fun. I get to write about restaurants and food producers, and I do recipe development sometimes too. I have a couple of cookbooks. So it's a nice kind of fun way to piece together a career. And you want to know what I ate out last?
Yes.
Because I ate dinner out last night and I ate lunch out today.
Yeah, give me both.
Okay. Yes. So last night I went to the Little Chief restaurant at the Grey Eagle Casino in the Nation.
Yeah.
That restaurant is so good. We did like a chef's tasting, and they have this real hotshot chef who just does the most amazing thing with, you know, whole animal butchery. He uses everything. The presentation is beautiful. It was all delicious. So,
serious.
Yeah. So all indigenous inspired stuff.
Oh, we just talked about this, didn't we, Dominic? We just talked about this. ChatGPT told us, I forget who we had on the show. Well, we asked ChatGPT about, I forget what it was, Dominic. I actually forget who
we were talking about diversifying the offerings for our guests, right? And there's lots of other foods from around the world, and how we were talking about how imported cuisines have changed the landscape in Canada, and the indigenous people, the first people, were the least represented,
mm-hmm.
and the last to come to the scene, right? But they're coming there now, and the places like that are doing an awesome job. And that's the one I was telling you about in Edmonton, Jay, that the on the West End in the hotel, they had a restaurant in there that was it's indigenous owned because the hotel is, but the food was all sort of indigenous inspired. You know, they had some mainstay stuff too, but. Yeah, that's cool. They're doing a good job. I think that they've really upped their food game at the casino.
They have for sure. It was really cool. And then today for lunch, I did the complete opposite, and I went to a restaurant called Buongiorno, which is a Calgary staple that had to move. Their building got torn down, so they reopened a few blocks down the street. I mean, it's technically a new restaurant. It looks like it's been there since the 70s. So it's, you know, red checkered tablecloths, just like very, very Italian. So, the breadth of what we have to offer here in Calgary. That's cool.
So Elizabeth, I got to tell you something before we get started here. There's like so many questions now coming through my head. Have you read this book?
No, I really want to though. I really, really want to. I know of it.
I know, like, I have to tell you, I've been reading it and it is insanely good. And there's not a lot of Albertan. I think Gabby is from Winnipeg. For some reason, there's a lot of Winnipeg, but no, she's not. But this book is incredible. You have to. You would love it. Everything about the stories, the history. There's some good stuff in here about Calgary, but you probably know more by far. But if you do get a chance, you got to get that book. It's incredible.
Yeah, I've been eyeing it. I think I'm a little sad that she beat me to writing it.
Oh, could you be you too?
Because I would. Yeah, it's just such a good idea. And, you know, I've traveled across the country lots, and that's what I love. It's like, what are those places, like your old spots? Like those.
Do it. There's room to do it.
There's room. We talked about this too.
If you had to, but do it. There's lots of, like you say, there's lots of untold stories, right?
It's true. Yeah.
There's 78,000 restaurants in Canada.
But it's so good. those are the spots that build cultural identity in cities. Like I love that. I love looking for those spots whenever I travel. I want to go to the new, you know, fancy, trendy places, but I want to go to the old spots too, because it's, I don't know, there's magic.
Are you worried, Elizabeth, that we will lose all those classic old spots that have that nostalgia a little bit over the next 10 years?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I mean, it's happened here in Calgary. Like we've lost a lot of places lately. You know, people retire and their kids don't want to take them over. Buildings get torn down and places, you know, like Bonjourno, they've resurrected themselves in a different building with different owners though, but it's still got that same thing. But sometimes places just, they don't bother. They can't get it together. You know, I see a lot of chains moving in everywhere too, not necessarily like the big chains, but smaller chains too. So I think we'll definitely, it's inevitable that we lose some of them because it's, you know, it's mostly retirement. People don't do it anymore.
Their kids don't want to work as hard as the parents did, right? Because for them to get to where they were was, I'm sure that what was it? Marv's Diner there down in Longview. Where was Marv's? Black Diamond. He would sing when he came to your table.
Serious? So
country songs and stuff. Yeah, it was cool, right?
Oh, I saw he. It was on Global. Did a thing on him when he was closing.
He retired, right? He shut down.
Yeah, I saw that.
But yeah, I think that it's hard because that generation of restaurants that were established 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, they were different times for sure. People had to work really hard for less money even. But
Dominic, it's not a podcast. You're loud dog barking. Now unmute yourself. Anyways, well, Dominic is dealing with his dog. That's the best part. It's not a podcast. We can do this.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is too, I mean, it's not only do the owners age out, the customers do too. There's always going to be younger weirdos who like that nostalgia for an era that they didn't actually live through. But I don't know if there's enough to keep some of those places.
Yeah.
Going.
Well, it's almost like a time limit to most restaurants, right? Like an expiry date that they have, unless they really reinvent themselves or have big money to do whole remodels and stuff like Earl's did.
Yeah. Or, you know, unless you have like those really historic places like, you know, Katz Deli in New York or something, that place is always going to be busy because it's historic. But most Canadian cities don't necessarily have. have ones that are that famous or that people go to often enough to keep them right. afloat.
You got Peters. Come on.
But do you, Elizabeth, do you take your kid to the places you said, where did you grow up? Sorry, you said you grew up somewhere.
Oh, here in Calgary. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you take your kids to those nostalgic places?
Sometimes, but no, not that much. I mean, a lot of the places I would have eaten at as a kid are long gone. Suburban family restaurants. I have to say, like, my husband turned 50 last year, and I took him to Caesar's, and it was the first time I'd eaten at the original Caesar's.
Really? Okay.
Serious.
So even I don't go to those places as much as I should.
I'm picking up on what you said earlier that sometimes the people don't the place closes down because the people are retiring, but also because people aren't frequenting. Mm-hmm. And I think they're not frequenting them because they don't know about them. And that's kind of our fault because you say Peters, Jay, but I've met people that have never been to Peters. Because
what?
Yeah, for sure. It happens, right? That it's in a prominent place, blah, blah, blah. You know, they've got, they're there and they've been there for a long time. But there's restaurants that I think it's hard because there's less money to spend on eating out.
Okay.
So there, it's going to be even a bigger challenge for those places. I'm afraid, too, that a lot of them are going to close down. Their rents are going to go up or they're like they don't own their property. That's going to be a massive challenge.
Yeah. And I mean, a city like Calgary, there were 500,000 people here when the Olympics happened. Right. And so places that are nostalgic for those of us who were here in 1988, most Calgarians weren't here back then. So they don't have that same sense of nostalgia. And if it's a place that's, you know, sort of trading on its longevity rather than the quality of its food, those new Calgarians are not going to go there because, you know, they don't have that value add of the memories.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. So we're going to go over to chat here, Elizabeth, because I could talk to you all night. First of all, thank you again. This is awesome. Tom, we're getting good guests, buddy. We're getting good guests, Tom. All right.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Elizabeth, we're going to bring this up here on the screen, because this is not a podcast, by the way, everyone, TikTok, this is not a podcast. Instagram, not a podcast. May look like a podcast, may sound like a podcast, but it's not a podcast. All right, here we go.
What do we call it? A live exciting event?
You screwed this up yesterday, too.
I don't know. What do we call it? Well, not a podcast, we know that, but what is it?
It's an event.
It's a live event. Yeah.
It's a live event. There
we go. That will be restreamed. So when it says live tomorrow, wasn't really live, right?
No, exactly. All right, here we go. So we're going to ask ChatGPT tonight because it is smarter than we are, we've been told. It's kind of been a little dumb lately, so it might be interesting. So we'll take it for what it is. But what three topics are we going to ask Elizabeth tonight and with us about the restaurant industry in Calgary? Are you nervous?
No.
Elizabeth, are you ready? If it knows you, this is it's awesome. And newer guest
yesterday. It knows you, 100%.
I don't think it knows you,
right? It does
know you. It knows you. What if it does?
It does. It knows you.
Oh yeah, here we go. Ready? Thinking. Ooh. All right, number one, the impact of recent trends and challenges.
Holy shit, that's quite the question.
That's a heavy one.
Oh, geez. Do you want me to answer that now?
Oh, you pick one. You get to pick one.
Oh, I get to pick one.
Yes.
Okay,
so we're going to get a rich discussion out of it, too, it said.
It didn't say that?
Bottom, look what it said.
We can always ask for new ones. If you want
new ones. A rich discussion.
Yes, we can go for new ones. Do you want some new? Do you want a couple more?
Okay, so what's the second one? Supporting local and emerging talents?
Talents, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
I'd like to know that. To me, I'm number two, but you're open to picking which one.
Yeah, you know, I think I like number two.
All right, let's go with number two. All right. So, first of all, what are... Dom, can you remember that?
No, paste it into it. Send it to me in a text, and I'll...
Okay,
I'll
I'm going to put it on. I'm going to put it for everyone for tonight. All right.
Yeah, I have my reading glasses on. I can't read that screen.
There we go. I'm going to put it up on tonight's. There we go. On Instagram. Boom. Okay. So local restaurant. Well, geez. Oof. too much coffee today. So we're going to discuss the role of local restaurants promoting and supporting local producers, emerging culinary talents. So what are some of the talents that you're seeing, Elizabeth, in Calgary right now? When it comes to...
Like for chef talent?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Give us the sauce.
Oh, geez. Well, you know what? There's a lot. Like, and I've kind of noticed, like, through sort of the bridge of the pandemic, there's been a bit of a changing of the guard. Like, sort of those, you know, celeb chefs from the mid-2000s are, you know, either kind of just, like, easing into regular restaurant life. They're not as flashy or in the media as much as they have been. A lot of them have moved away or closed the restaurants, things like that. And there is sort of a younger cohort, I think, coming through, which is interesting to me because a lot of them are doing pop-ups and things like that. And it's kind of hard to keep track of some of these guys. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of talent in the city. It's funny because, like, conversations I've had with people are often about, like, is the era, you know, the rock star chef over? Do we still talk about chefs the way we used to? Like, do we need to know the name of the chef in the restaurant? And I think in a lot of cases, yeah, like, there's still a lot of really chef driven restaurants. Like, I think about a new place in Calgary that opened just before Christmas called Salt and Brick.
Cool.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, and it's like it's actually a second location of a restaurant that's in Kelowna. The one in Kelowna, though, is like a 35 seater. The one in Calgary's like 150 or something. Okay. So different scope, different scale. The one in Kelowna changes its menu daily. The one in Calgary changes its menu weekly.
What?
Yeah. So it's a big restaurant, and it's so they really have to kind of rely on their chef power. So their chefs are two guys. The head chef is a guy named Dave Bohati, who Calgarians might remember him. He worked at a restaurant called Market that is now a food truck. And then he's worked at a bunch of other places. He was the chef at Teatro for a while. So this is him kind of like shining, like, this is my talent. I'm making up stuff every week. Go for it. And it's a big enough job that they have another chef. Like, their chef de cuisine is also kind of a rising superstar. He's a guy named Alejandro Bazzolino.
No way.
And he was at a place called, he was at Vendome, which is also a Teatro property, fairly recently. And he also runs a pop-up called Matto, M-A-T-O. So he's another, like, young go-getter. So these are, like, two big chef personalities just going for it in a completely open kitchen. I went and had dinner there shortly after they opened and sat at the kitchen bar by myself. I went solo. And I felt like I was in an episode of The Bear. Like, it was just like...
No way. Serious?
I mean, a good one. One where, like, nobody's fighting. Nobody's fighting. Where
I was going to say, The Bear's a little... Yeah, okay.
But it was like just like... So, I mean, that is... It's like full-on dinner and a show. But these guys really are laying it all out. Like, it's new dishes. And they'll come up with stuff
on the
fly too. Like, they'll just be like, oh, we have some beets lying around. Here, I made you this. Like, it's... So that kind of stuff, I mean, I think is sort of, you know, reinstating the chef is sort of front and center.
That leads me to a question then is, you know, how, like, so I forget where I read this, that there was a trend of who said this to me? It might have been on one of my shows, but the beauty of inconsistency with the dish was the consistency for that restaurant. Mm-hmm. So as we look at, yeah, you're like, oh no. So Liz, so Elizabeth, if you look at, so we think about this. So we would go to a restaurant because we always go there for the same thing that we love. And what it was is that every time they would go, that same thing would change. And then that was the wow of that restaurant. So I got a different take on that sandwich I always love so much.
Cool.
You know, ideally same kind of thing, but it would change. And then that was the uniqueness of that restaurant. So kind of similar in a way, like changing the menu all the time. Mm-hmm. But I remember someone saying to me, I can't remember who it was, but it was actually breaking the consistency that we all built the industry around of everything's got to be consistency, consistency, consistency. You know, you always got to have the same thing all the time you go there. And they said, no, why is that the case? Because you are limiting a lot of the chef's abilities to really create. And I think with a menu that's changing every week or every day, which is mind blowing, those chefs got to be so excited and engaged, and the talent must just be pouring out of them. It must be incredible.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's the thing too. I mean, and I actually talked about this on CBC last week about, you know, the difference between that mindset of, I want to be able to go to this restaurant for my anniversary every year and have the same pasta yeah. that we fell in love with, you know, or we fell in love with each other while eating it, you know. So there's some restaurants I think thrive doing that still. Like people mm-hmm. want their dish. Like I think about my father. He orders he has a dish at every restaurant he goes to that's his dish. And okay. his catchphrase is, I wrote them down on the list and I crossed them off because he'll never go there again because they took the lobster roll he likes off of the menu. So there's those diners and those restaurants, and I think that definitely fills a niche. But I think for these other ones that are changing so much, either seasonally or every day, every week, the consistency is the consistency and quality, right? Like as long as there's things are consistently yeah. good, you know, they might not always be yeah. your taste, but as long as they're not just totally flubbing it and
putting no, I think it's about like improving it. Like, could you look at it like, how do we improve it every time? You know, this week we're going to do it this way. Next week we're going to do it this way and just keep improving it. I think there's something there in the sense that the younger generation is looking for experiences on everything. Everything.
100%. And I think that's why so many of them love pop-ups.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
There's no consistency there at no, all. No. It does give people an excuse to go out to try something new. Like if you know it's going to be different every time, if you're like me and get bored, there are restaurants that are great restaurants and I love them, but then I'll only go every few years because I know the menu hasn't changed enough to keep me excited. Like I like to be treated like a baby. I like the chef to be like, this is what I made. Here it is. and I like to be surprised. I know that's not every diner's preference, but I
think it's more than half of people are in your camp on that. That they want something new. They want to know there's something new that they're changing. So,
Elizabeth, when you go out, which we still have to go for lunch together because I want to go for lunch with you. I think it'd be so much fun. I have a question for you. When you dine out. What was the question I had? Dominic, you made me lose my train of thought there.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, way to go. your camera's off. When you dine out and you're looking for those experiences and what people are doing differently in there, do you find, how do you open your mind to going into these locations that you're not distracted by everything to really look at them for what they are? Like you're having a bad day or something, you know, your parking was crazy to find. Do you get rid of all that when you go in there?
Yeah, I have to. Cause I mean, I feel like because food is my main beat for my career writing. And I don't know, maybe you feel like this too. Like every time I eat, I'm working.
Okay, that's cool.
Even if I'm just out for lunch with a friend, I'm working. Like it's luckily I love it. But so yeah, I kind of have to be, because I feel like there's not a lot of food writers left anymore. No. There's not a lot of dedicated food writers. So I feel like it's only fair for me to be as impartial and unbiased as possible. Like,
good for you. That's good.
It's got to be hard though sometimes. I'm impressed by that, because you know, I think it's amazing that you do that, because I could see people that are like, having a bad day going in here, and then maybe something's not right and it just makes it worse and worse. Have you ever had a bad dining? Not to tell us who it is, but have you? Like really bad, like you're like, I can't believe this.
Oh yeah, I won't say the name of the restaurant. It's a chain. I had a dinner out or a lunch out with my family when I was a teenager, and we still talk about it to this day, where everything could have gone wrong went wrong. Like, it's,
tell us, don't tell us the place, but tell us what happened.
Tell us what happened.
I was a vegetarian, and I ordered a veggie burger. It came back. It was a meat burger. I took a bite and I was like, oh. Sent it back. He said, oh, no problem. We'll make you a new one. It came back out. It was the same bun.
No.
So they just slapped a new patty in. Awesome. And then my brother was eating something, and it was so hard. His fork broke in half.
No.
So at this point, we're all laughing because it's like, what? And then the waiter came to pick up a plate. Excuse me, I have to cough.
That is awesome.
And his nose bled on the table.
No.
Like a drop of blood.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's food safety 101. What not to do, Jerry. Don't bleed at the table.
Elizabeth hit the button. She's off right now. So thank God this isn't a podcast, because that would mess stuff up. She'll come back here in a second. Isn't that crazy? Like,
I think everybody could.
But I told you this. I love bad experiences
it is, because I never looked at it like that. But that's cool, because you get to see kind of, you know, the best and the worst, right? And,
yeah.
We talked about when that happens, not to penalize the restaurant. But maybe have you gone back, Elizabeth?
Yeah, we have. We were actually at the same, not to that location. We were at the same chain recently. Like, many, many years later. And
did they do a good job?
I'm reminisced about it, because my partner actually at one point looked at the server and said, and he wasn't being mean about it, but he said, this is the worst meal my family has ever had. And he was right. It was actually, like, it ended up being very funny. It's a funny memory. Yeah. Yeah, of course. Like, I've had bad meals, especially when traveling. You know, you end up at a place that you probably shouldn't have gone to. You don't know its track record, and you just have to kind of roll with it. Like, it's, I know we all spend a lot of money eating out, and you don't really want to have a bad experience, but there's always a good one around the corner.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we used to, when we'd go out for dinner and with my chef, and we'd go out, and if we had a bad experience, we kind of actually liked when it was a bad experience, because we're both food guys, and it'd be like, all right, we got a good one. It was like a gem. And then we would just be laughing over it. Like, I've seen everything from raw chicken being given to my chef, which, if you ever dine out with a chef, do you ever notice that they take the food apart before they
eat?
Yeah, like they have to learn about the food before they eat it. And he would do that. And I'd be like, can you just eat the damn burger? And then he pulls it apart and he's like, look, it's raw. And I'm like, no. Right? So, yes. Very cool. Very cool. I love that. I love that. So I got to ask you this question, Elizabeth. This is the part of the question that chat told me to ask you.
Okay.
It's asking around supporting local producers. I mean, local is almost like a part of the DNA of restaurants today. It's just everywhere, right? Like it's like, I don't think you're not going to have local somehow weaved into your restaurant. How do you see restaurants moving forward to continue to leverage that essence of local on their menus and what they're doing?
Yeah, you know, it is funny because I got to a point where I'd be interviewing chefs and asking them what made the restaurant special. And they say, well, everything's local. Like we source everything locally and we make all the sauces from scratch. And I'm sort of like, well, honestly, that's what everyone says. And I mean, yeah. At this point too, like I think sourcing local used to be, you know, it was more costly for a lot of people. So it was kind of a prestige thing, but I do think like a lot of local produce, meat, things like that is going to become a better option for sustainability for a lot of people. It's more, you know, supply chain, it's a little bit more reliable depending on where you are. So I think it's no longer just a matter of taste. I think it's just going to become the way that people do business. But I think too, like, I don't know, like I always have wondered if those local partnerships, listing the names of farms on menus, things like that, if it's something that the general public care about or if it's just things that...
Well, I think they did it one time, didn't they? Like there was that, wow, that's cool.
Do you believe they still do? I think they do. But, you know, I have noticed a trend though towards restaurants telling me, oh, we get our lamb from this farm, but we don't put it on the menu anymore. And I'm not really sure why. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
I got an idea on that. I like when they do it as well. But I think for me personally and for people that I often dine out with, when they say that like I find myself going to Google that, which I try not to do when I'm sitting eating. I don't want to do that, but I want to now go Google. Well, what farm is that? What is it? Is it because originally when I started doing that, it was, I didn't believe them. I didn't believe what they were necessarily saying because you hear stories and you see, you know, sometimes local is not possible to do all the time, especially in a large way. So yes. So sometimes we have it, sometimes we don't. So that might be a thing, but I think if the consumer is inquisitive and wants to know a little deeper, it's harder to explain sometimes for the servers, right? The chef might know the story behind all the different suppliers, but now am I going to be able to relate that information to all my staff so that when the customer does ask, is it causing a service issue?
That's a good point. For sure, because that's the thing too. I mean, especially with the last couple of years, it was impossible to educate servers on everything. There's so much turnover. It was probably a lot more headache for them, for sure. And then there's this other thing too, where local isn't always better. I mean, I don't want olive oil from Saltzman Island necessarily. I want olive oil from Italy. And I don't necessarily always want Canadian cheese if it's not, if it should be Italian cheese or Spanish cheese. Mm-hmm. So I think some restaurants are starting to admit, what if I like the imported stuff better? You know?
Yeah.
So I do think, you know, as a diner, I want the best possible quality. I want the ingredients that should be appropriately used for those dishes. But I do feel too, like, I think so many people are still quite disconnected from their communities. You know, I'm obviously involved in restaurants and I write about things. So I try to, you know, insert myself in as many places as I can within the city. But I think about family members who rarely get downtown and they don't know who the local ice cream guys are and they don't know who the local, you know, cheesemakers or the guy who makes, you know, the organic flour or whatever. So I think a lot of those people still think it's pretty cool. Like, oh, these are Alberta, it's Alberta asparagus season.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing about how restaurants influence local and local influences restaurants is restaurants that are trying to do that to the quality game, when they're close with their producers, they can say, and I think they influence the producers in a big way. And not necessarily always just because of volume, but only because the producer wants to up their game and because it's going to benefit them and everything. When the restaurant goes back to the producer and says, hey, we like it, but we're looking for something closer to this. And that inspires the producer to up their game because the restaurants prodded them to do it. And then they get to go sell it in retail and farmers markets and all that. And it elevates the quality of everything when the chefs and the restaurants are sourcing locally, because I think they drive what the innovation is at the producer level in a big way, more than they may think.
Right, right. Well, because local tastes are different. Like tastes aren't always, like I think about, I mentioned lamb again, because I ate a couple times at this Mediterranean restaurant I was writing about. And normally I don't love lamb. Like I don't love New Zealand lamb specifically. So they kept serving me lamb and I loved it. I was like, this is delicious. It's from Lambtastic Farms.
Lambtastic Farms. I know.
It's
spectacular. It's really good.
So good. And they service a ton of restaurants, and their lamb, I do think, better suits local tastes.
Is that up by in central Alberta?
Yes. Closer to Red Deer, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it's by Statler.
Yeah. And I mean, it's by an Irish guy. Like he's Irish by.
Yeah.
But I do think their lamb appeals to local tastes. So I don't know if they create a product that does that, if it's, we're all just used to it now, but I do notice that I do prefer their lamb to a lot of other lambs.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So
Richard, Lambtastic was storing there in his cold storage, just as an FYI, Jay.
Okay.
Yeah, I started buying it for home because somebody introduced me to it, and I was like, "Yeah, when you get the New Zealand stuff." But I gave my parents some of that, and they hate New Zealand lamb, and they prefer Ontario lamb. But when they tried this lamb, they said, "Well, this is the best they've ever had." So,
Cool. I've heard that. That's why when you said that, I haven't heard it in a while. I don't hear much of it. I'm not a big lamb guy. I just don't. There was once I had it like 20 years ago, and it was incredible. I still remember that dish. But since then, I went and tried to create it myself, and I just messed it up.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was ever since then, I can never have it again.
Santorini.
What?
Santorini. They do a good job.
Yeah. So I have more questions. Elizabeth, how important is, and this is for the restaurateurs that are out there and that work in the restaurant and everything. And today's a tough day for a lot of restaurants because they have to pay back the loans and stuff that they all possibly borrowed and stuff like this. And we've heard this from Restaurants Canada was posting a lot today. Kelly was as well posting on there. I posted as well, just thinking of people going through this kind of difficult time, because we know restaurants didn't really bounce back as much as, you know, a lot of other businesses possibly have as well, but it's very vibrant in Calgary. I travel the country as well, and I always think Calgary is just rocking in the food scene. Would you agree with that? Like it is starting to become a very big player. Not that it wasn't before, but it was always Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, than Calgary. Is Calgary getting up there to be one of the top ones?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially, I don't think you can compare us necessarily to Toronto and Vancouver. I lived in Toronto for years, and I actually found the restaurant scene hard to navigate because it's so big, right? Yeah. And it's less cohesive. I think Calgary is maybe a little more cohesive than Toronto. Vancouver, I think, is killing it right now. I think Vancouver has a great restaurant scene. And I think, you know, I know when they both got Michelin stars, people are like, well, why not Calgary? And I think Calgary's restaurants are different than Vancouver and Toronto's restaurants, but I think they are really good. Like, I think there is, for a city this size and a city that is fairly isolated, like, we're not right next door to another really big city. I mean, Edmonton has a different restaurant scene than Calgary. Oh. I think it's really interesting. So different.
It is so different.
I feel like we're not necessarily directly influenced by Edmonton or Vancouver. Like, we are kind of doing
your own thing.
Our own thing, which I think is really interesting. I mean, I think that happens in a lot of art scenes too, when a city doesn't necessarily have a lot of, you know, sort of direct influences coming from, like, the shadow of whatever's really close by, that they can kind of do their own thing. So yeah, I am interested to see what's going to happen, because I think I mentioned this earlier. Like, I do see a lot of chains taking up real estate. Like,
well, they're coming to Calgary because it's affordable.
So yeah,
their businesses here, right? Like, and same with Edmonton. We have California Pizza. Mm-hmm. You know, is killing it up here, and you know, like, they didn't go to Toronto or Calgary; they came to Edmonton, right? So I think it's also economically a great place to start if you are bringing up some of those big changes from the US marketplace, which we do know some are coming up that are really big, that are going to be, you know, rattling a lot of stuff in Calgary. But I think it's almost like a safe place. Saskatoon was doing the same thing, right? Saskatoon was like a safe place.
Well, I think, and Winnipeg for the longest time was kind of the test bed of any US chain to come to Canada.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Well, because I think and London, Ontario, I think, is the other one. If you can make it there, they kind of said you can make it anywhere, right? From a chain perspective, because the cross section of the population, blah blah blah, the economics. But that, yeah, Winnipeg and London, Ontario, I think, are the spots. Edmonton.
Have you been to London? I've been to London.
Calgary, right?
Hey, if you can survive just going to London, you're good. Love London, Ontario, people, but. I've been there. I actually love London. I think it's beautiful. I love that whole area down there, Woodstock and all that area. Yeah. I'm not joking. Okay, I do. Right? I've done a lot in those two cities. I actually do. Yeah. Back pedaling here a little. But is there any other upcoming chefs or locations? Elizabeth, you mentioned the one, the Salt and Brick. Is there any others that you want to throw a shout out that we got to go try that we just don't know of?
Yeah, you know, well, there's a new place that's opening, sort of. And I think it's opening, I believe, like, I don't have all the details. I think it's opening sort of as like a nighttime pop-up in the meat and bread sandwich shop. And it's called, oh gosh, I shouldn't even talk about this without knowing. I think it's called Jasmine's, but it's Garrett Martin, who used to be a culinary director with Concord Group.
Okay.
He was sort of the opening chef at Major Tom. So he left that job last year at some point, like almost a year ago, I think. And this is his new venture. So,
oh, really cool.
That'll be
Major Tom was like number one in Canada 2 years ago, or when
number one best new.
Best new.
Yeah. So he has I think it's called Francine's, something like that. So that one is, I mean, and that's what a lot of these younger chefs are doing, Francine's. That's what a lot of these younger chefs are doing, is they're kind of doing proof of concept, like doing a little pop-up, which, I mean, I feel too, like, some of them, it doesn't work out great for them. Like, people don't hear about it. I'm often not really a fan of pop-ups because I feel like the service often isn't there. There's, you know, the level of the wine usually isn't there. They run out. I like the scrappy energy sometimes, but sometimes it's also like I'm spending $200 you know, I want it to be on point. So, and I also, you know, worry too much about not necessarily permanent pop-ups like this, but all the little ones kind of eating into some of, you know, the full brick and mortar restaurant's business too. Right. So, but yeah, I think a lot of these younger chefs are doing these sort of proof of concept, not quite pop-ups, but not permanent businesses too. So I think we're going to see more of that. People just testing the waters, looking for investors.
I was going to say investors got to be, they're still out there. I was talking to a restaurant today that has investors and opening up an incredible place up here. And I'm like, wow, they still exist. That's good.
I think they do. I don't know that much that's coming. I mean, Concord dominates a lot of the new restaurants.
Yeah.
Calgary, and you know, which is controversial. I think they do a great job. I really like them. I think they've raised the bar in Calgary a lot. But they sort of opened up a lot of stuff over the last couple of years, you know, catching up after the pandemic. And are now opening up restaurants in Toronto. So,
oh, are they? They're moving out there.
Yeah, they just opened a Lulu Bar in Toronto, and they're opening a Bridget Bar and a National. I think they're all in the same sort of, like, there's a big restaurant complex at the bottom of.
Yes, I know what it's called. The Well
Distillery.
The Well. I think it's called The Well. Is that what you're talking about, Elizabeth? Yeah. It's huge. Yeah. It's called The Well.
Yeah, I think there's
Adam's tied to it.
Yeah, lots of restaurants in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where their focus is right now. So I don't think they have much planned for Calgary in the near future. So I'm just, you know, but there's always places opening up. There's always, like, you know, new Indian restaurants, new Thai restaurants, and lots of new bars. There were a ton of new bars last year. So,
well, there was a lot that closed. Bars took a hit over the last 5-6 years, right?
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Is there anything that's completely out there, bizarre, that you're like, this is the most craziest restaurant I've ever been to in Calgary? Like, it's just like, holy cow. Like, kind of like, have you seen on TikTok the Karen restaurants? Right?
Yeah.
Like, they give you attitude. Like, is there anything that's just, not like that, but like anything bizarre that you're dining out and going, I can't believe they do this?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Mm-hmm.
So me and Dominic came up with an idea. We'll share this with you.
Okay.
We did a show last week called The Dollar Dine. We invented how to do a dollar store restaurant. We did.
You're probably not a return customer of ours.
Apparently not.
It's going to be no service, but
exactly. We don't need investors either, because it's all dollar stuff. Yeah, we created a model where we could actually sell good food, QSR model, but everything is $1 to $3. That's it. No, nothing over $3.
Me and our guest said up to 10, Jay, just so you know. Up to 10.
I was thinking at
$10 for the full meal, $10 for everything, all in.
$10 all in, all day.
$10, your max bill.
Well, you know, I think you got something there, because I don't know about a dollar, but you know, I have teenagers. They want to eat out with their friends.
I never thought of that.
They're coming to our place, Jay.
Yeah, they want inexpensive food. Like my kids, there's a place called Tokyo Street Market here in Calgary, which is very low cost. I mean, the food is fine. It's not high end New York City omakase or anything, but it's okay Japanese food, and they love it because they can get away with eating there for $10. They can find something.
Yeah,
I am stoked, Dom. We got to move forward with it. It's a great idea, right? Because here's the thing.
We're gonna buy our hot dogs like the day before they, you know, they're
no, we're not. It's all good food.
We're going to reduce weight by doing that.
No, I did a show today that people were asking me about P&L. And here's what I believe, and this is to all the restaurateurs out there. The restaurant model is broken. It cannot exist much longer based on the percentage of sales or percentage of return profit. It doesn't work anymore the traditional way. And we haven't reinvented it over 200 and some years. It's the same thing. Buy a product, sell it up, increase it a percentage, and then make a profit, and that's how you create your revenue. That is shrunk so much now that it is so razor thin that it doesn't have sustainable power. So you have to look at other ways to generate profit in off your brick and mortar. And then when we came up with multiple different ways, all the way down to a subscription model restaurant, using like, so the dollar dime would have a subscription base as well. So you would subscribe and then you would get discounts or whatever it is. There was a million different things we came up with. But we looked at it a different way to look at the P&L. So there would be generating profits coming in of other revenue streams would offset the cost. So you could charge those low cost prices and look at how to bring in money. So it's like you've been to Rick's, I don't know if it's called Rick's Grill, but down in Lethbridge, they have Rick's Grill in the water tower. He had all those billboards around the bottom of it, selling those for X amount of money. We looked at different things like that. We looked at advertising inside the restaurant, vendor advertising. We looked at quite a few actually ideas to come up to bring the money in that would offset the cost on the menu. So we reinvented the way of thinking. Yeah. Because if you look at it today, it just won't last. It just, robotics may help support the profit of a restaurant. If the price of those can come down a little bit more, they will offset. Like for a QSR, you don't go there for service really. That will, I believe they'll have to come in because the profits have shrunk so much. You won't have investors. No one's going to invest in a restaurant with a 1% return.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too is sure, like fine dining, high-end restaurants, that's a different market. But for people who are hungry and want to eat, you're right. It's a hard sell.
The dollar dime. Anyways,
secrets, eh?
Yeah, I know. I the other day, well, this was my idea first. I came up with this idea first. You know what I did? I tell you, because I have proof. I even took a picture of the cover that I wanted for my book, went to Chapters and put it in the book aisle with the other books in that section, took a picture and I put it on LinkedIn, I think it was. Everyone's like, oh, you got a book? Like, no. So I have proof. But anyways, it's a great book, by the way. Elizabeth, we'll wrap up. But I just want to thank you so much for your time tonight on our late night show. And I always, this is the second time we've chatted, but you're so amazing to speak with when it comes to our industry. It's unbelievable. So thank you so much for your time.
Likewise.
Yeah, before you leave, though, can I ask a question, Jay?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's usually the other way. He won't shut up. Let me in on one.
What are your thoughts, Elizabeth, on, so you go out and you write about the restaurant. I don't know if you're, are you a food writer? Or do you consider yourself a critic? Would you be
I
don't think so.
Okay. I consider myself a critic. I assess and, I sit on judging panels and stuff, but in my actual written work, I tend to profile rather than.
Yeah, that's when I read your stuff, that's how I see it. What do you think about the ratings people give restaurants on Open Table or Yelp or any of these other places? And what are your thoughts on how people give feedback to restaurants and what should it be?
Yeah, it's really hard because I in some ways I feel like that those reviews are valuable because it is just like a regular person's take. Like people want to know if they should spend their money. And I think it's good that there is some guidance. And I definitely use I might not read the reviews, but I'll look at the star rating if I'm on a road driving through a town. So I think they're valuable in some ways, but I also think, I think we are losing a lot of professional food writers, and I think there is a real place for trained journalists who can look at things fairly, look at like the wider breadth of restaurants. I mean, if you've only ever eaten, if you eat out once a month, twice a month, you don't really have that idea of what's out there.
No.
In the same way that a food writer or, an industry person might. So I do think a lot of times some of those reviewers might not have the breadth of knowledge to take down a place or to prop it up even. So it's, you know, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm some kind of expert. Like, I'm just a person who eats out a lot and, you know, has gained some knowledge from talking to so many people and visiting so many restaurants. But I do think journalists and, you know, professional writers take some responsibility in making sure they can back up what they say, whereas the public doesn't necessarily take that.
Yeah, around. I kind of advocate for be careful in how you leave your review, because you could do a lot of damage that's not necessarily fair or true, right? And if it was true, would you be better off telling the restaurant directly versus leaving them some sort of damning review? Because that's hard. Now, if the restaurants on it was honest with themselves, they'd find ways to, I think, to solicit that feedback in a different way, maybe. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure that the cue card, the cards at the table are the right thing, but getting it from the servers might be a way. But yeah, I'm interested in I'm curious that. Why have we lost journalists in every city that write about food? Like, there's not a lot left. What's is it just the media's, hey, we got to try and write about the news and that's all that's left? Or
there's no budget for it, largely. Like, it's shockingly not a high paying job. So I mean, even I have to diversify by writing about other things.
Does the public not want to know?
No, I think they do want to know. I think it's just the media, like the print media industry is being gutted.
Yeah, that's right.
But
now, like, on that, I want you to share, because you posted, that's why I text you, your thing that you're putting on your subscription you have for $5.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you got to share everyone. Put that on there. Dharma,
during the pandemic, I started a newsletter for Calgary restaurants and food and beverage. Just, you know, a place I can kind of dump all the stuff that's in my head that doesn't necessarily fit into articles. So it's a Substack. It's called Who's Hungry Calgary. You can read it at subscribe at hungrycalgary.substack.com.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll put that up on this show. Not that it's a podcast, but we'll put this up there and we'll tag it in, and then I'll share that, Elizabeth, everywhere.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun to write, and I do. It's free every other week, and then there's a paid option too. But
nice.
That's really cool.
Yeah, the newsy part is free to subscribe, so it's fun. I like doing it, and it's people seem to like it. So
yeah, I was gonna say, like, obviously we're food people, so we're interested in that. But I think like you said, you write for Avenue and for the Herald and CBC. I think I've heard you on CBC. Do you do CBC Radio as well?
Yeah, I do it. I do it in the afternoon. Yeah, they have a food critic in the morning named Elizabeth Carson. And I'm like, do we both need to be named Elizabeth? It's confusing to people. People will be, your voice is so different in real life. And I'm like, yeah, that's not me. So she does reviews. And then I do food trends in the afternoon.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, doing stuff like this obviously would help a little bit. Have you ever considered doing your own thing, on like this?
Like this?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I'm just like, I'm an old school journalist. I'm just like, you know, so the newsletter is sort of me building my own thing a little bit, but mostly I just have my nose down. Writing
headlines. So, Elizabeth, what we'll do, because I think you're phenomenal, we'd love to have you back many times.
Yeah, we're going to have her on a regular.
Yeah, because we interview people from all over the world and everything else. Yeah, we just had Paul Barron on from Florida yesterday, which I'm still trying to digest what he shared with us. It was incredible. But we'd love to have you back as a co-host and join us as much as you can and share all this good stuff that you do.
Oh yeah, whenever you want. Like, I love talking about food and restaurants. And again, like, any avenue I can have to share just all this stupid stuff I pick up along my
way. It's incredible. It's incredible.
I'm happy to do it. Yeah.
We'll share your newsletter, everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Sorry, that you're doing.
On the producer side, on the food manufacturing side, the agri-food side, you report a little bit on that.
Oh yeah.
On the manufacturing side,
Just don't ask him a political.
I'm not going there.
No, not tonight.
Is that growing? Is that stopped? Like, there used to be some innovation and some growth and opportunities, but it's hard because of where we are in the country. And where do you see that? Is that growing? Are we getting some cool stuff happening on the manufacturing side?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, definitely like on small scale, right? Like there's always smaller artisanal products. I don't know too much or pay too much attention about larger scale, larger scale stuff. But yeah, I think so. Yeah, there always seems to be new stuff out there.
That one of our next guests, Jay from Sizzle, we'll talk about that part of it, because on the small side, they need real kitchens to test in, right, and to do stuff. And that's a barrier all the time to entry, right? They're going to do it from their house and stuff, and you know, but when they go to a restaurant, the restaurant's going to say, hey, can you produce X amount, or can I need to buy this much? And the entrepreneur is stunned by it because they're like, how am I going to make all that stuff? So
cool. This just is like commercial kitchens, like the shared kitchens you can rent out. I've heard of people like buying food trucks too, just so that they have a commercial kitchen that they can.
Have you heard this Uber model for kitchens? So you can, what was it? We talked about this. Was it last night?
Cloud kitchens.
Well, it's kind of like that, but you can book these kitchens like Uber and stuff like this. Like you're renting a kitchen for the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a shared works office space, but with kitchen. Yeah, but
they had a fancy name for it because, I mean, I used those in the past and stuff like that. But what was it? Didn't he say something unique about that?
Ghost kitchens or cloud kitchens?
Yeah, I can't remember. Sorry.
Uber, the Kaepernick guy started cloud kitchens in the States.
Yeah. But we asked him, is that going to stay? And he's like,
he thought Kaepernick was a kind of a real estate play more than a kitchen rental place. And, you know, some of the, you know, to get slightly off topic, some of those cloud, the sort of shared kitchen places have been in trouble with public health recently. So there's that. It's tough, right? It's a tough game to bring new food. But the cool thing is, like we said, because of the pandemic, there is opportunity in spaces that need new restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth, I know you have to go. It's late. Don't we always got to remind ourselves that we do this late night? So it actually is late night for people. So in Toronto, it's almost 11 o'clock. So anyways, and there is people joining us from Toronto. So anyways, Elizabeth, we'll have you back many, many times and enjoy the conversation. We have other guests on. We want to have you back because I want to share all your knowledge with them as well. So thank you so much.
Anytime. I'm always here. So
that is awesome. And Dominic, it's been a pleasure once again. What were you gonna say?
Thanks. I was gonna say thanks to Elizabeth.
Were you okay? I'll let you talk this time.
No,
anyways, we're back again tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern time, 7:30 Mountain Standard Time. And tomorrow we have Monty on the show, and then we have Chris on the show from App 8. Do you know App 8, Elizabeth? It's the computer it's the app that allows you to buy your pay for your food if the server doesn't come to your table.
Oh, yeah.
That guy. We have that guy on the show tomorrow night. Yeah, really cool. Really cool what they built and stuff like this. And they've done very well and things like this. And they do like Rogers Arena here in Edmonton. And they do a lot. I think they do all Boston Pizzas and stuff. So, yeah, we have him on the show. And then we have Monty from Florida joining us again. And thank you. It's going to be a blast. So, and then next week we have some really cool guests. Dominic's lining up for next week as well. So,
yeah, that's why I asked, right? That there's so much cool stuff that happens, like the amount of the really even when it's stagnant, the innovation that happens is cool.
Oh, for sure. I mean, think about like Partake, the non-alcoholic beer is a Calgary.
Your president just messaged me the other day and said something to me, and I said, that is like one of the most incredible brands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, that is an amazing brand. Is that, that's Calgary?
Yeah, the guy's like originally from Ontario, but he lives in Calgary now.
Yeah, he messaged me just the other day. And yeah, I said, I love your brand. Actually, I think he watches my show. So I think that's why he messaged me. And I said, I said, your brand is incredible. I see it all the time. And well done. Because that needed to be reinvented.
Yeah.
It really did.
Tastes good. So
yeah. Cool. Like, do you remember back in the day when someone would joke with you and then be like, it's, you know, maybe taste it. Yeah. Like your beer was like, oh, it was just horrible. Right. So anyways, thank you again, Elizabeth. We'll shut this down. Dominic's got to get to bed.
He's an older guy. Yeah, me too.
And anyways, thanks so much. And everyone else, thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you guys tomorrow night at 9:30. And we'll wrap it up from there. Thanks so much.
Bye.